Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Peter Klein with you today. Kelly Kirsch will be hopping on in a little bit, live from the core, as we continue with our citywide 50-50 draw here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Not to explain how 50-50s work, you should know this by now, but 50% of the pot goes to you, 50% goes to help the great cause that is Kidsport. It is the favorite thing that we're partner with here at the station for me, helping kids get into sport, so we're helping out with that today at the core for Hockey Central at noon. So that's where the big boss man is. We'll be catching up with him in a little bit. Also today we have No BS, of course, and Eric Dehatchuk will be stopping by in about half an hour's time. Missed him a couple days ago. Everything should be worked out. So looking forward to catching up with Duha today as they're off in California, them being the Flames, with their matchup against the Kings last night and the Ducks tonight. Here to help us break down last night's game between the Flames and the Kings, it is our NHL insider, Peter Labardius.
Flames insider Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Well, Lou, another frustrating loss for the Calgary Flames. Kind of feels like we could just replay some of these interviews because they continue to build up, and just another night where the, I don't know if it's the effort, but there just wasn't enough there for the Flames last night.
Well, Peter, I don't think I could really disagree. I know that yesterday we talked about three words, which were engagement, dictate, and work. And I just think they were a tad shy on all of them. And the other word I would use last night was execution. Just did not think, especially early in the game, that they were very sharp, passes behind one another. Weren't a lot of clean breakouts. And I don't know about you, but, you know, had it not been for the excellent work of David Rittich in the first period, that game probably isn't 0-0 going to the second. And that, I think, for many, is the hard thing to swallow. You know, you'd had trouble with this team, and I do think there are situations every year, and I could point to them, where it doesn't always make the most of sense. But one team that you just think shouldn't give you trouble gives you trouble. And for the Calgary Flames, that team has been the Los Angeles Kings. So you lose twice to them this year in regulation. You give up five of a possible 8 points that you could have had against a team that, you know, finds itself at the bottom of the Western Conference. And that is why it really, really stings when you come up short, because you just wonder. And, you know, my friend, we've had this conversation a number of times in this segment, and that is, how many of those can you get away with? And it's hard not to go there. And it's also hard to not go to one place. Did they strike you as being engaged and ready to dictate early in that game?
No, not even a little bit.
So that, whenever the same patterns, you could almost, in some ways, have predicted it. I know I had some concern going in. And what you really want is you want those patterns to change. You want, in a sense, to feel more comfortable in those situations. But, you know, in thinking it out, as I always do, this is an interesting year in the league. So I think you'd have to agree, is there really a lot to separate probably 20 teams in the league?
No. No, it's a big middle ground.
There really is a big middle ground, isn't there?
Yeah.
So when there's a big middle ground, and, you know, this trip already has been a perfect example. You know, I loved how the Flames played in Vancouver. Truly thought it was one of their most complete games. Had lost three in a row, big stage, went in there, and just, they did it right. They really did. And, you know, San Jose was one of those games that the score was the same. It favored them. It was nice to see them, you know, continue to get, whether it was depth scoring period. Were the Sharks' details very good? No. And in a lot of ways, that allowed them, you know, to get off to the great start. And as Jeff Warner talked about yesterday with me, what he was really impressed about in the San Jose game is how they handled it at 3-2. What I didn't like last night is where they handled the situation in many ways from the get-go. But for me, Peter, two really telling points in a game. Because with the Midland, if you want, and I don't even think Midland is a word. I just thought that it sounded pretty good right about now. But middle of the pack, it means you're susceptible to lose games in some respects to teams below you in the standings. And it also means that you have more than the capability to play well against the better teams. Last night, though, two things bothered me. Well, there were a few. I didn't like the first. Didn't see enough attention to detail. But after David really holds the group in the first, you score the first goal in the game. But what happened after that? Did you manage that well? How many times this year, during the course of this season filled with inconsistency, has this team not always managed key moments properly? So Michael Backlund scores. You take a 1-0 lead. Peter, within a minute, not only has the lead evaporated, you're trailing. And those are the situations that more than anything will drive coaches crazy. There are times when, you know, you just really have to manage the situation better. You can't get caught up on a rush that eventually leads to a bang, bang, clear, and a breakaway for Austin Wagner. Like, that's just not managing the game the way you need to. Sometimes if all you have is to shoot it in and understand who's on the ice and who you're on the ice with, like, that's the part about last night that guaranteed the management and the coaching staff wouldn't have liked. You don't like getting through a first. You can understand that. But then you take the lead. So you put yourself in a good position, but you don't give it any chance. And I also find in games against teams like LA, if you can take away their will and want for any length of time, now the battle becomes hard for them. Because then they start to ask themselves, what's it all about? And what am I willing to do? But they never gave it a chance. So that was one moment. The other one was in the third period. You have a minute and 3 5-on-3, and you really don't threaten a whole lot to score. Mm-hmm. And I said it even during our show last night on the broadcast. Going in, I just felt if they don't score on this 5-on-3, they're not going to win the game. And they didn't. So managing key moments, what you do in key moments a lot of nights makes a huge difference. But last night was one of those nights that doesn't sit well because there was some self-inflicted issues where had you just even, I think had they managed the few minutes after they took the lead in the game and gave it a chance to build, I truly believe this morning we're having a different conversation. I really do.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
Another one that kind of frustrated me was after they scored the empty net goal to pull within one, it just felt like there was a, oh, okay, well, we're just going to figure this out. It's just going to work itself out. And it's something we've had a few conversations about where it just seems like everyone is waiting for the situation to just figure itself out. And it doesn't work that way in the National Hockey League.
Well, it doesn't work that way in anything.
Right.
It really doesn't. But yes, you know, I've talked about flipping the script with this team from one year to the next. Well, again, I'm trying not to be too harsh today because, again, was it a really bad effort? No, it wasn't a bad effort. It just arguably wasn't good enough. And as much as what you just talked about, your frustration late in the game, so a couple things contribute there. You had a lot of the same people on the ice for the better part of the last 4 minutes of the game. So that becomes taxing. and takes a lot away from your ability, you know, to make more things happen when you need it the most. Because, again, you've put yourself in a bad spot. And when you put yourself in a bad spot and you need two in the last four, guess what? It's taxing. And it takes a lot and it requires a lot. And in that case, you're right. They didn't have a lot left after they pulled the goalie and got it to 4-3. But the more disturbing part, getting back to your point, Mr. Klein, is isn't that the hard part about the way the game started?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that you needed that comeback in the first place.
Yes. Hasn't it been this team's inability at times to impose their will and dictate when, I don't know if the right way to put it is that they should, but it is when they need to, and they needed to last night, and they didn't. And again, it's not that they don't care, and they don't want to, and they want to, but it's just, it's the troubling part for everybody when they watch this game, whether you break it down or no matter where you are as a fan, anybody, management, ownership, is you'd like to see some patterns change. And this team shows us that it is very, very capable of playing excellent hockey. But after two pretty good efforts, you saw old patterns creep back in. And those old patterns, isn't that what cost them?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely it did. So, yeah, it's another frustrating one for sure. Another issue that we saw last night for the Flames against the Kings. Last night, it was very clear that this team was missing two of their top defenders. I know that we've seen some players elevate, and we know that the guys are battling. But last night, it seemed pretty obvious that this team was lacking on the blue line.
Well, it was hard, for sure. Yeah. It wasn't a crisp, clean night. And give the Kings credit. You know, the one thing that they are is they work and they can play heavy and they can be really hard on you. So, you know, they're more than capable of applying some good offensive pressure. And I don't care who you have on the back end. You know, if you find yourself with 20 and 30 foot passes that you have to make for outlets rather than 4 and 5 footers, you're going to make mistakes. And there were too many of those situations, whether it was through the middle of the ice in the neutral zone where you saw it, they like to clog back. The Flames do it. Jeff talked to me in the morning about their ability to get through the neutral zone in that 1-3-1 setup that Todd McClellan employs. You knew that puck support, your ability to do that, make 4 and 5 foot passes, was going to be crucial. Peter, when you leave your defense with 20 and 30 footers to make, you're going to make mistakes. But I will say that for the first night, since those guys went down, players look like maybe some of the extra minutes or the extra pressure or, you know, playing these games out of your slot may have taken a toll. They just were not overly crisp in terms of, I didn't really completely dislike how they defended people all the time, although there were some mistakes. I didn't like how they managed the puck. And I didn't like how they managed the puck as a group, not just the defense. I didn't think the forwards helped them enough. And then, you know, there were certainly some tough errors that, you know, led directly to goals, which happens every single night. In mm-hmm. one way, shape, or form, but you're right. I mean, it looked like, for the first time, the way you put it was perfect, that just you really miss those guys.
Yeah.
And maybe you just flat out, you know, we've talked this whole hit about how you manage the game. Well, when you have your best people in key places, it gives you a chance to manage things better.
I think we should end it on that note. Time zones make these ones a bit more challenging when you're out on the West Coast. So we'll let you go get to work, and we'll chat tomorrow about the Flames and the Ducks.
Yeah, just a couple of things. Look for Cam Talbot to start in goal tonight. We won't meet with the Flames and till Hockey Central at noon is over. That's when they're available today. And we'll not be surprised if Sam Bennett comes back in. And the Flames did play a good game in Anaheim earlier this year when they won 2-1, and Cam Talbot was a big part of that. So thanks for this, and we'll catch up later.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Well, there we go. There's Peter and Peter talking about the Flames losing last night in Los Angeles, as it was a game they were, you know, quite frankly, PK, just chasing too much, right?
Yes. Yeah, right from the word go. They were behind the play. They were behind. I mean, they had a lead some crazy how for a few seconds in the second period, but no, they were chasing the whole night. And against a team like the Blues or the Avalanche or someone like that, fine. Against the last place team in the Western Conference, that's a problem.
And we talked yesterday, it's like, just don't get outworked, and that's exactly what happened. And I think there was a few things that really kind of stood out for me was the 5-on-3 and just getting outworked to lose pucks when there's two more guys out there. It's almost inexcusable. Don't know if they needed a timeout there or what, but it just seemed the urgency wasn't there, and there was a perfect time to get back in the game and get after it. It didn't happen, and there were some tough moments there. We were talking about Noah Hanifin having such a, you know, a good couple of games there. He kind of reverted back.
I thought
Shillington had some glaring mistakes, unfortunately, and cost the team a little bit.
And I thought Yellison looked every bit like a player making his NHL debut. I thought there was a couple of times where the speed of things was just a little too quick for him. And that's something he'll learn, but it was still, I thought, pretty obvious that they were missing two of their top defensemen.
And I think we heard about it in the morning show. Sometimes it's like, you know what, maybe it's simpler. Just up the boards. Take it so your guys can go after it. And don't do the high risk play. So that's unfortunate when you kind of look back at the season. You had four games against the Los Angeles Kings and you got 3 points.
Just not good enough.
No, that would be a shame if that's what cost you at the, when you kind of do the deep dive kind of thing. But it's never boring, and they keep you guessing. And the weird part about all this, and the encouraging positive part about all this, they win tonight. They go 6 of 8 for points on the road. You take that every time.
That's true. Yeah, that is the silver lining, and there has been a bit of that for the Flames a lot of times this season, where it's okay, this team has not played their best hockey for more than two games in a row at any stretch this season, but they are still in a playoff spot entering play today. They're still the top wild card team in the Western Conference entering action tonight. So while it's been incredibly frustrating for 90% of this season, they're still in a playoff spot. Now, I will say, that's not good enough. Just making the playoffs this year, I don't think is good enough for this Flames team. They need to get a few things figured out, but at least they're going to be in a spot where they have a chance to figure things out still.
Yeah, they can figure those things out in May or June instead of April, as it were, you know, because you have the deep dive after things get settled. So for the next little while, obviously, Flames Radio in business again tonight, pregame at 7, play-by-play at 8, as the Flames go back to the Honda Center, where, I mean, I think if you want some fun and some aggravation, just go on the internet and kind of look up Flames in Anaheim in the last how many years. It's been tough.
Yeah.
Win last time out, though, right?
That's so true. Yeah, so they're on a one-game winning streak. So they've won one of their last one games in Anaheim.
Yeah, so undefeated this season in Anaheim.
Yes.
So you can take that with all your other stats and information. So that's what's happening. And then obviously on Saturday, big hockey night in Canada game as the Chicago Blackhawks come to Calgary. And that'll be a late game, 8 o'clock start for that, and then a holiday Monday game on Family Day on Monday with a 2 o'clock start against the Anaheim Ducks. So we're going to get our fill of Ducks, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, those are winnable games for the Flames, right? Like, those are, if you're the team you want to be, you win those couple games.
Yeah, you got to get some points here somehow, some way. And then you got Boston coming up later after that, and then a pretty decent road trip that's pretty busy, and some teams that are fighting for it. So this will be very interesting. As
pretty important trade deadline in there too.
As February rolls into March. So I mean, God, they don't, you know, you're wanting to see where anybody is, and you want some separation. I don't know if you're going to have that between now and the 24th of this month. We're here live on location. You know, sometimes we like to take Hockey Central live, and we went next door to one of our favorite malls. You know what? It is our favorite mall. It's the Core, right downtown. So if you are a office worker, you're listening online right now, and you're saying, you know what? I always wanted to buy a 50-50 ticket to help out the kids. This is your chance. We are, well, you can't miss us, Peter, because we're by a tennis court.
Yes, yeah. I think this is my first broadcast by a tennis court.
You don't see that a lot in a mall.
No.
But it's right here. It's all a part of the Calgary National Bank Challenger, which is coming up later on this month. So that is at the Tennis Center down in the southeast, February 24th to March the 1st at the Austin and Victor Alberta Tennis Center. So they're doing that. And we're here selling 50-50 tickets for Kidsport Calgary, the draw coming up on the 6th of March, a guaranteed prize of $20,000 or more. You just never know. But I do know you won't win if you don't, buy a ticket.
We don't just put everyone in the city of Calgary in and draw.
We can't bill you later. get to the Kidsport website or link off our website if you want to just pay by credit card on the old interweb. That'll work as well. Got a busy show here today. We're going to go right back to Los Angeles, Southern California, and talk to Eric Dehetchuk. So Eric was at the game, St. Louis and Anaheim. Is that what I understand?
Yes.
I saw that, so he can maybe give us a little perspective on what he saw there, as he's you can kill a couple birds with a few stones there with two teams so close. So we'll find out from Eric. He's our NHL insider. He is next right here on Hockey Central at Noon.
Hockey Central at Noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's Kelly Kirsch, Peter Klein, live on location today. We're at the Core, the shopping center right downtown. We're trying to sell as many 50-50 tickets for Kids Board as we possibly can. People are here helping out a great cause. That draw is coming up on the 6th of March. More on that in just a little bit, but right now let's go back to Los Angeles and talk to our NHL insider. He's Eric Dehetchuk. Eric, how are you?
I'm good. I'm sure Lubo said it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood here.
Yeah, it's the weather usually is just fine down in Southern California, and that's just the way it goes. I tell you, you've been a lot of different places, and you've seen a lot of things. I guess maybe talk about that Blues Ducks game that we had on Tuesday. And just the absolutely frightening scene that we saw on the St. Louis bench.
Yeah. Well, let me preface it by saying, Kelly, so on Tuesday I decided, because I'm working on a story about the St. Louis Blues trying to defend the Stanley Cup. And because they were in town playing the Ducks, I went to their morning skate, often a really good place to gather information. So I spoke to a number of the players there, and I also had a really good long talk with Jay Bouwmeester. I hadn't seen him since they won the Stanley Cup, so I congratulated him. He looked great. He was wearing a suit. I mean, he was as good. He looked as good as I've seen him in a long time. His father was there. It's the Blues' father's trip. So we had a really good conversation about the state of the Blues and where things were at. And I remember saying to somebody afterwards, like even before this thing happened, I said, "Oh, I saw Jay Bouwmeester catching up with him," and mentioned how good he looked. And then to have that happen at night, I have to tell you, I didn't know what to say. I'm rarely speechless, I mean, this is how I was when it happened. I didn't know how to respond. It was like, how can that happen? I talked to him 6 hours before, and he looked fabulous, and he's in a good mood. And so you're right. I mean, it speaks to like greater truth about enjoying the moment and how close we are to a catastrophic incident. And again, I'll reiterate what everybody else said. The way the NHL is equipped now with first responders, with trainers on the bench, with defibrillators close by, so that when there is a potentially catastrophic moment like that, they find ways of turning it into something that isn't a catastrophe. And that was, I think, the feeling that everybody had when they left the rink. It was just like, boy, that could have been so much worse. And, it's frightening how mortal we all are, especially, well-conditioned professional athletes in their prime. I mean, it was crazy. And the only, sort of good thing to come out of it is a reassurance that when things like this occur in a professional sports event, you know, teams are just far better equipped to handle it than they were, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, if you're going to have a situation like that, you want to have it at a sporting event like an NHL game or Major League Baseball, NFL, whatever, because they're such professionals and they know what to do, and they don't hit the panic button. That's just their nature, and it's amazing to see how it works out. And it's sounds like a lot of good news coming from the doctor, and that, you know, things, they're just doing tests to figure out what happened. And hockey and playing in the NHL is sort of way in the back burner now for Jay. It doesn't really matter. Your health is number one when you're a family man and a husband and all those types of things. So we wish him nothing but speedy success, obviously, and we'll see what the future holds. But yeah, that certainly was kind of a sobering incident when we were actually having our beer league game, of all things, and afterwards we saw that, and it's like, well, you know, that's a little real life that sort of crept into it. Eric, I want to get your thoughts. You know, we were talking yesterday before the game that, you know what, the Flames have got to win this game. If they play their game, they should be okay. They just can't get outworked by the LA Kings, and lo and behold, they got outworked by the LA Kings. Your thoughts on what happened at Staples Center last night?
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't a very good game. What I would say is it wasn't a very good beginning. I mean, I'm watching this, and I'm thinking to myself, it's like they're skating in quicksand, you know. And what was so impressive about the two wins, obviously, against Vancouver and San Jose was just how they played with pace, how there was a tempo to the game, how there was a rhythm from line to line to line to line. And it just, you know, it felt like the choreography that has kind of been missing for most of the year was there. And yet, going into the game, I thought, this could be a trap game. You know, the Kings were at that point in their season where they're real close to rock bottom. I mean, they've already moved Kyle Clifford and Jack Campbell. There are trade rumors swirling around Alec Martinez and Tyler Toffoli. You know, I visited with Todd McClellan, the coach, a couple of times going into the game, and you know, the sense I had from him was that, you know, something is going to go right for us soon, because nothing has in a while. And we walked out of the building together after the game, and you know, he basically said that was, you know, that type of game has happened to them more often than you can count this year. So, I mean, we always say the same thing, that, you know, as bad as Detroit is, as much as Los Angeles has struggled, no team ever goes 0-82. Somebody is going to win, and the Kings just look poised for things to go their way, and that's kind of what happened. I think part of it was, you know, some defensive lapses in the, you know, that allowed, you know, clear-cut opportunities by players. My biggest takeaway from the game was, you know, watching everybody in the defense corps playing in a role that they're not accustomed to, and how long can they do that? You know, I mean, you know, like TJ Brody's playing number one defenseman minutes, Noah Hanifin's playing number two, Rasmus Anderson's playing number three, Michael Stone is playing four. You know, Yellison was fine, but the confidence that you have as a coach to put him, you know, in a game in the third period when you're looking for a goal. I mean, I don't blame Jeff Ward for playing him under 3 minutes. It was an NHL debut, but then that puts a stress and a strain on other players that are used to playing in a more of a secondary role. Now they have to play a primary role. They're playing, you know, additional minutes that they're not used to. It's going to take some time, I believe, for these guys to adjust to those roles. And I thought that there was a little bit of fatigue towards the end in terms of all of these guys just having to do more than what they're used to. So it will be interesting to me to see what happens tonight, because the Ducks are another one of those teams where on paper there should be no issue, right? And certainly based on, you know, like, are they still going to feel the after effects of having to stop a game in the middle of it like they did on Tuesday night? And this is their first outing since that game against
that's new territory. Hey, Eric, like, who knows what you're gonna see? Yeah, interesting. We are chatting with Eric Tkachuk right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. This is Hockey Central at noon. I'm Kelly Kirsch. He's Peter Klein. We are live on location at the Core, Peter.
Getting ready for that Flames Ducks game tonight. The Ducks, as you mentioned, in a similar spot to the Kings, potentially selling off a few assets. Ryan Getzlaf's name has come up, and you're out in LA and seeing a number of different reasons why someone would want to stay in California. But do you think we'll ever get to a point where Getzlaf wants to maybe go chasing another ring, or is he a Duck for life?
Yeah, Yeah, I know he's a Duck for life. And actually, there's a real good story on that on our website at The Athletic, because Eric Stevens, our correspondent in here in Anaheim, sat down with Ryan and talked about the future and the present and what you know, how he imagines the final act of his NHL career. And he was pretty clear that, you know, like, he prefaced everything by saying you never know what can change, and you know, like, you know, life takes you sometimes down paths that you don't expect. But the essential takeaway, if you read the piece, and it was really in depth, is that he is happy where he is. He is dug in. He communicates with the general manager. He understands what the plan is. And like all of these teams that are in rebuilding mode, they all, you know, will tell you the same thing, and it's true. You need to keep some players around that can bridge the gap. So, for example, the Kings. Anže Kopitar is going to be a King for life. I mean, his game last night, by the way, I thought was fantastic. I mean, won all those defensive zone faceoffs at the end when it really mattered. You know, like he's still a really good 200-foot player. Seems to, you know, cares on every shift. Like he's just, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing missing in his game. And I would say that that is not the case with Ryan Getzlaf anymore. I think he's still a very good player, but at the height of Ryan Getzlaf in the NHL, when he was one of the elite players, we're not seeing that anymore. But I don't believe he's in the least bit interested in going off and chasing another Stanley Cup. He's won one. He's dug in. You know, he's tied into the fabric of this community and the fabric of the team. And so yeah, I see him as being an important bridge when they get from the old Ducks to this new generation of players. And you're starting to see a few of them arrive in the NHL. You know, the Sam Steeles and the Terrys of the world, and I think, you know, Isaac Lundstrom is in the minors right now, but there's a player that they believe is going to be a real good NHL player for years to come. And I would suggest too that they might be a little further ahead of the Kings in terms of the rebuild, because, you know, some of these younger players, they've been drafted, they've got a few years under their belt, and they're starting to get to that maturity, you know, that age 21, 22, 23, where you go from just being a guy that's happy to be in the NHL to being a guy that it may start to be a contributing factor in the NHL.
I find it interesting you brought up the point of him kind of being that bridge, and it's something that I think as fans we forget about a lot when you go into a rebuilding mode, and it's really just anything not stapled down, just sell it for whatever you can. And I look at the Canucks celebration last night with the retirement of Daniel and Henrik Sedin's jerseys. Bieksa was talking about how the Sedin twins passed on what they knew to guys like Besser and Pettersson, and now they can pass that on to whatever generation comes on behind them. And it really is kind of a reminder, you do need a couple old guys around just to remind everyone of how it's supposed to be, instead of just letting a bunch of 20-year-olds have it figure it out.
No, it's a great point, but it has to be the right people. You know, I've seen it go the other way, where there's players that are hanging on at the end of their careers, and they are not the least bit interested in mentoring young players. They are hanging on for dear life to their position, and they see young players as a threat, and they don't want to do anything to help expedite their progress, because they know that as those young players progress, that could be the development that pushes them out of the lineup. So it can go that way too. But in the case of the Sedins are great. I mean, I'm glad you raised them, because they are the perfect examples of the point you just illustrated. You know, like incredible gentlemen, wonderful to deal with. I spent a lot of time covering the Canucks when I was at the Globe and Mail, and they had those teams that competed for the Stanley Cup championship, and just the way that the Sedins carry themselves. You always say, you know, like if your children can be those types of people, those types of role models that, you know, are constantly just trying to do the right thing all the time. They have like a strong moral compass, I guess is the best way of putting that. So those are the types of players that you, when you sort of are in a rebuilding phase, you have to make sure that it's those types of players and not the other kind that I outlined that are the ones that stay. Because if you have the other ones, then you develop all kinds of bad habits, and the lessons that they teach is it's okay to be selfish, and it's important to be selfish, and we're in this for me, not for we. So that's the distinction. But I put Getzlaf, I put Kopitar, and of course the Sedins in that category of the people that I would be happy to have, you know, overseeing, you know, my transition to the next generation.
It's Eric Tkachuk right here on Hockey Central at noon, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Let's keep the Pacific Division chat continuing. We talked about the St. Louis Blues and what they had to go through with Jay Bouwmeester on Tuesday night. Well, you know, the road continues, and they're in Las Vegas. What about the Golden Knights? They did the coaching change, and I think that is hasn't blown up in their face, but it's certainly been a chance, or it's been a bit of an adjustment, because I think the coaches play different ways, right? And it's all about structure with Pete DeBoer. What are you hearing from the Golden Knights and that turning into something? Because they just seem to be spinning their wheels a little bit, like some other teams in the Pacific Division, Eric.
I mean, it's a great question, Kelly. And I have to tell you, like, I'm mystified at what's going on there. I really am, because I truly believe that that the Golden Knights had the right mix to win the Pacific Division and be the best team in the Pacific Division. And you know, when you're doing your forecast at the start of the year and you're trying to pick the Final Four, cause it's hard to pick the Stanley Cup champion. I had Vegas coming out of the Pacific Division. I'm not prepared to say that that isn't going to happen. But I've seen a few things. Part of it is that Marc-Andre Fleury's goaltending isn't at the level that it previously was. And that's a hard thing, I think, for anybody to accept, because when he went into Vegas, he had those injuries right at the start. They managed to, you know, tread water for a while. But he was the critical piece at the point where reality was supposed to catch up with the Vegas Golden Knights in their expansion season, that kept it together. He was just so good, and the level of his play, he was playing all-star caliber goal for them in their first year and all-star caliber goal for them in their second year, and now he's playing okay, just okay. And so that makes a big difference, because when you have a team like Vegas that has that, you know, like everybody pushes on the rope and there are no genuine stars on the team kind of a approach, you know, better than average goaltending is absolutely critical to the success formula. So I just think that there has been a drop-off in his play, and it has affected everything else in the lineup. Now, on paper, I think anybody that watches hockey very closely would say, you know, their 1-6 defense core probably, you know, is in the bottom half of the league. But I've seen development in Shea Theodore. Like, he's, you know, this is Shea Theodore's best season. He's been better this year than he was in either of the first 2 years. And I think Nate Schmidt had an exceptional first year and hasn't quite got back to that level, I like him as a he's a number four playing as a number two. And I think that if they could fix one thing in Vegas, you'd really like to have a defenseman that can make an impact. If you recall, back before the Erik Karlsson to San Jose trade, one of the most interested suitors was Vegas. And I think that they felt that Karlsson coming in there would make a difference to that team. Now, I think they, again, were imagining Erik Karlsson, top five defenseman in the National Hockey League, and he's dropped off for different reasons, injuries, age, whatever. But he's not the impact player that he was. So I think the combination of those things, that the averageness of their defense core and the overall, you know, drop-off in their goaltending is contributing to the fact that they are spinning their wheels a little bit. I still like their team on paper, though, guys. I still like their team on paper. And there's a part of me that thinks that at some point if Fleury can get it back and if they can add one more piece on the blue line, that they could – they're the one team in this sort of win-one, lose-one bunch that's, you know, packed in the middle of the Pacific that I think they can string a bunch of wins together and pull away a little bit.
Okay, Eric, we appreciate you taking the time out. Enjoy the game tonight, and we will talk after the long weekend on Tuesday.
All right, thank you.
There we go, Eric Dajic, as he joins us here on Hockey Central at noon, Tuesdays and Thursdays, right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's Kelly Kirsch and Peter Klein. We've got a special guest coming up next, Danny from the tennis folks, that are going to tell us all about the Calgary National Bank Challenger, which is coming up, it actually starts on the trade deadline, February 24th.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's funny how dates stick in your head. Yeah. So that's coming up. We do want to mention we're here for Kids Sport. We've got our citywide 50-50 draw. It continues. 50% going to go to the winner. 50% going to help out all the great things that Kids Sport Calgary does in terms of registration, equipment, all that kind of stuff. They try and help out as many kids as they possibly can in any kind of sport they possibly can.
Yeah.
And for $5, you can help out that cause. And who knows, come March the 6th, when you flip on breakfast television, you could be a winner on City TV and Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Good way to start the day.
Wouldn't that be nice? Now, you can also just get your tickets online if you want. Just a link on our website. Look for that, or Kidsport Calgary can do it as well. this is our last show together for a while because
it is.
I'm taking tomorrow off, and then you are going on your crazy honeymoon.
Yeah, I'm taking 2 weeks off in Japan. So
oh my goodness,
bit more than an extra long weekend. Just
I tried to warn you. I tried to warn you about getting married, and then I tried to warn you about, you know, the whole honeymoon thing. But I guess you have to learn for yourself.
Yes, yeah, I have to make my own mistakes. Mistakes in Japan, I think, is a pretty good place to make them.
Yeah, that's going
to
be absolutely fun. Have a great time. All right. Well, we're going to let you go. I'm going to get my guest on, and then you guys continue at 1 o'clock. What does old Steinberg have planned for us today?
I think we're just going to yell about how bad the Flames were last night.
No. Okay,
we have, obviously, a lot of reaction from the Flames game last night, and Flames meeting with the media in the next few minutes, so we'll get any reaction going into the game against the Anaheim Ducks coming up tonight.
Well, if the Flames win, they get 6 out of a possible 8 points on this road trip. If they lose, it's a .500 trip, which stings after you win the first two. So we'll find out about that. We'll take a break, get another special guest coming up next right here on Hockey Central at noon, live from the Core on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back, everybody. Kelly Kirsch live on location. We are here at the Core, the shopping center right downtown. We are hanging out here. You can't miss us. We're on the second floor, second level. And what we're doing is helping out Kids Sport, trying to raise as much money as we can by selling 50-50 tickets. And speaking of Kids Sport, they're also going to be involved in something special coming to our city, back to our city. It's the Calgary National Bank Challenger. Professional tennis returns to Calgary. Danny is here from this tournament, and you're about over a week away. Are you absolutely like floored, or do you see that you've got it all worked out, everything's calm? What's your status right now, Danny?
Yeah, we're very relaxed.
Okay.
At the moment.
Okay, so far?
But yeah, we're in good shape. We're, you know, about a week away from the tournament, and everything's coming together nicely, so we're looking forward to having a great show for everyone.
So this is the second year, right?
Second year, yeah.
And that tennis center down in the southeast on 90th Avenue, Austin and Victor Alberta Tennis Center, is something else.
Well, thank you.
I remember they were, you know, trying to get it figured out, how to get it built and how's this going to work. And now you can't imagine the city without it. Tell us about that facility and how awesome it's going to be for fans to kind of take in all this tennis. It's such a great spot.
Yeah, so we built a world-class state-of-the-art facility in Acadia on 90th Avenue. And the center has been open for 3 years, almost 4 years now, and done very, very well. Our programs are full. We have a great membership base, and we're actually looking to expand in the next year or so.
Oh, my goodness. Now, talk about the tournament itself. It's coming back. It's different time of year than it was last time, which is kind of neat. So it's coming up on the 24th of February, goes to March the 1st. Yeah. So who are we going to see in terms of tennis players coming here?
Yeah, so first of all, we're very excited to have Vasek Pospisil.
Oh, my goodness.
Postmedia's Canadian Male Athlete of the Year. He's very much in form right now. He just beat the number 5 player in the world yesterday, and he's playing shortly, actually. And Ivo Karlovic, who's a former top 15 player in the world. He's our 2018 champion. He's returning. Ivo's got the second fastest serve in the history of tennis at 156 miles an hour. We also have a young German player, Dominic Kempfer, who made the round of 16 at the U.S. Open last year and lost to the eventual finalists in 4 sets. So very excited group of players. We have a lot of the young players coming up. We have a former world under-18 junior champion as well coming to play our event.
Wow. This is one of those things when you think about Western Canada, you're not going to get tennis at this high level really anywhere. I mean, outside of you know the Rogers stuff in Toronto, Montreal, this is big time tennis. These are folks on their way up, and maybe they're on their way down, but trying to get back up to the big leagues, as it were.
Yeah, this is the largest indoor men's professional tennis tournament in Canada, and it features many of the best players. So you'll see there's 7 players who are currently or former top 100 players. So you see a wide range of people. NCAA champion is playing in our events. We have all kinds of great players.
Okay.
And the level is incredible. You know, there's guys that are 400 in the world in our event who are beating 100 players like last week. So very exciting. And, you know, there's always 2 or 3 people that play in our event that will break through in the next 12 months, and you'll
and
see
you'll
them play.
Remember when we saw them in Calgary? There they are.
Absolutely.
Now, the crowd for tennis. Now, we've got hockey fans, and we've got football fans, and people have gone to baseball, and there's been some golf tournaments, that kind of stuff. Is it kind of stuffy? Is it you know, highbrow, or can people have fun and have a good time? Tell us what kind of the crowd can expect when you go to this thing.
Certainly you can have a lot of fun. Yeah. We actually run our event a little differently. We have a hospitality lounge, and people have access to the lounge upstairs, and that gets a little rowdy for a tennis tournament.
But, yeah.
Certainly a lot of activities. You know, we want to have a great, passionate crowd. We want to support our Canadian players, especially Vasek, who's coming into town. And so we're looking to have a, you know, a lot of people and making noise and cheering them on.
So how do I get tickets if I want to get tickets?
Yeah, you can get tickets a number of different ways, but calgary.nationalbankchallenger.com is the easiest way to get it, through our event website. You can also get it on Show Pass, or you can come to the Core February 10th to 21st between 11 and 1:30.
Okay.
And we'll sell tickets here. And if you try tennis at the Core, we're doing a free promotion. We'll give you tickets as well.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Now, you're doing something with Kidsport. You know, we both, you know, we're always doing stuff with Kidsport. They're an amazing organization. Yeah. And you hooked up the first time the tournament was in town, and you're going to do something kind of fun. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, we're big supporters of Kidsport as well, and the Conry Sports Bank as well. We're doing a Leisure Olympics on the Friday of the quarterfinals, which will be the 28th of February. And there'll be teams of 7 or 8 people on a team, and you will come and you'll try your hand at pool and foosball and air hockey. And after that, you'll have access to watch the evening match. And
there'll be
food in the VIP lounge that you can come and watch. And it's going to be a great event.
Can people still get involved in that?
Yeah, I believe so. You can contact Kidsport, and I think they're looking for 1 or 2 more teams. So
okay, well, yeah, get it together and have some fun, and then go watch tennis as a group. That's kind of cool. Well, Danny, thanks for popping by.
Thank you.
You know, we love this tournament. We're going to be supporting it and talking the story as much as we can. So that's the Calgary National Bank Challenger. It's coming up February 24th through March the 1st at the Austin and Victor Alberta Tennis Center. That's on 90th Avenue. You can link to our website. We've got all the ticket details there as well. So I know Pinder and Steinberg are going to be live on location there one of the days, so we'll be chatting it up for sure. Thanks so much for popping by.
Thank you.
There we go. There's Danny from the big tennis tournament coming up real soon. Okay, we're going to take a break. Steinberg's ready. We got hockey coming at you. We got Flames. We got Ducks. Pregame at 7, play-by-play at 8, so another late one. But we'll see what happens with Pinder and Steinberg at 2 o'clock. Pat's on his way next right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.